case, Cruz Mayaho versus Holder, Mr. Bird.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court. My name is Roy L. F. Berg, and I represent the petitioner in this next matter before you, Mr. Roberto Cruz Mayaho. Your Honor, 17 years ago in Salamita versus INS, this Court held that we are a nation of immigrants, built by immigrants, and continually enriched by a flow of immigration.
Can you speak somewhat louder and slower?
I apologize, Your Honor. 17 years ago in Salamita versus INS, this Court held that we are a nation of immigrants, built by immigrants.
Oh, all right. Spare us that, would you please?
By a flow of immigration.
No, come on.
So I have a concrete question for you, which is, after our decision in Sarmiento, in which we held that the board is entitled to say that the critical date is the date of the, let's say, the merits decision, why isn't all of this, I mean, it's a very long line of motions to reopen and motions to reconsider and motions to reconsider the denial of the motion to reopen and on and on. Why aren't they all basically untimely? And why isn't it perfectly reasonable, given the Sarmiento decision, for the board so to regard them?
Sarmiento, Your Honor, I believe is distinguishable in that in Sarmiento, there was no petition for review filed at the initial decision of the board dismissing the appeal of the immigration judge's decision.
But why does that matter? If the question is, what's the trigger point? You know, what is the key date from which all of these other things get measured? Whether you filed a petition for review, whether you haven't filed a petition for review, we have to frequently in the law fix the date from, you know, the date the judgment is entered or the date the board has decided. And in Sarmiento, we said that the board had reasonably decided that the date of its initial dismissal of the effort to obtain relief was that date. And if that's the case, then everything else here is untimely.
Well, Your Honor, I would submit that Sarmiento is distinguishable for the reason that I stated.
Okay.
Secondly, the motion to reopen that we filed that dealt with seeking reopening based on withholding and the torture convention that was initially denied, the government, the respondent, moved.
Are you talking about the March 26, 2010? I lose track of all of these things.
Well, this was the motion, Your Honor, we had initially filed of seeking reopening, not the first one that that board member Grant denied, saying it was untimely. But the second motion to reopen.
Look, okay, so just again to be concrete, on July 17, 2008, the board affirms the immigration judge's denial of his application for cancellation of removal.
Sure.
And then, you know.
Then we filed a timely motion to reconsider.
Right.
And at the same time filed a petition for review of that, the board's initial decision of board member Gremlsberger from 2008. Then a motion to reconsider was denied. We filed a petition for review of that. The board, this court, consolidated both. And while they were pending, we filed, before this court, we filed a motion to reopen. And in the motion to reopen, we raised the changed circumstances in Mexico, the increasing violence there.
But the board finds that you haven't shown the baseline, that you just haven't found, that you haven't supported the changed circumstances.
Well, in that initial motion, board member, in his decision, board member Grant, said that these circumstances, or I believe you said the stresses on the Mexican infrastructure, affect all who live or visit in Mexico.
Which is certainly true.
But it doesn't mean that it's any less hardship to these children or to the
position. No one can be deported to Mexico because they have a lot of crime?
Well, my position, Your Honor,
is
that...
Is that your position, yes or no?
I think each one should...
Is that your position, yes or no? That no one can be deported to Mexico because it has such a high crime rate.
Your Honor,
yes or no? Or don't you know?
Your Honor, I don't know the answer to that question. And I think it's a very valid question.
It's an important question because it's very clear in the immigration law that there are countries in the world where conditions are deplorable and nobody would want to be in those places. And the immigration law says if it's just a generally bad place and there's nothing specific about you, then that's not a ground for relief. And if it were, then the answer to Judge Posner's question would be yes. You know, we should just take Mexico off the list of places that we might send people to. But that's certainly not something we've done. And in the grand scheme, I'm not even sure Mexico is the worst place in the world to go to.
Mm-hmm. Your Honors, as to your question about all the other motions, whether
is there something special about Sarmiento? Now, who you are obviously affects your risk of being deported to Mexico. If you have, you know, relatives in one of these cartels, or if you're a police officer, you have relatives who are police. Then of course you could be in special danger. But if you just happen to be a Mexican, I don't see how you could possibly have a rule which said that just by virtue of crime in Mexico, no one can be removed to Mexico anymore. We're seeing this argument in all our immigration cases involving Mexicans. Mm-hmm. It can't be right.
Your Honor, in the record is a copy of the board's decision in Frosto Jaramillo. Frosto Jaramillo, the board did reopen, citing the ever-worsening violence in Mexico. In fact, in that case, the board reopened 5 days before oral argument was heard before this court. Mr. Frosto Jaramillo, like Mr. Cruz Mahayo, was an applicant for cancellation of removal and the father of United States citizen children. The board did reopen, and it was involving the same time period. The hearing in Mr. Frosto Jaramillo's case before the judge was in 2009. The board reopened in 2010. We were seeking reopening about the same time.
Were there any special circumstances involving that person?
It was basically the ever-worsening violence. Now, his motion to reopen was filed within the 90 days of the board's initial decision. Ours, we agree, was not.
The position really is that no one can be deported to Mexico anymore.
Someone in my client's position, I believe, would not be, should not be, because he will be very vulnerable and...
Because he's a Mexican.
Because he would be a victim of the violence.
So he can be removed to Mexico.
Your Honor, I believe my client should not be. And he has U.S. citizen children who I believe would be very severely impacted.
Mexico, by the way.
Pardon me, Your Honor? I didn't hear the question.
What is the crime rate in Mexico?
I don't know the exact crime rate. We did attach the Time magazine cover story from 2011 that shows the very increasing...
I'm interested in particular locales.
There are certain locales that are, I believe, more dangerous, Your Honor, others that are not as dangerous, but certainly it is spread in different areas throughout the country.
Well, if there are places that aren't dangerous, then those are the places that these deportees go to, right? There are a lot of cases which say that you cannot object to removal on the basis that there is a certain part of the country that if you were sent to, you'd be in great danger. There are other parts you wouldn't be in. So if there are safe areas in Mexico...
Our position, Your Honor, is that the violence is spread throughout the country.
No, you said there are safe areas and there are dangerous areas.
And
right?
There are areas that
so
are more dangerous.
Uniform.
It's not uniform, and there are perhaps areas that are not as dangerous as others.
First, a minute ago, you said there were. Now you're saying perhaps there are. So you're saying perhaps the violence is uniform. We ought to have evidence of that.
Well, we did submit, Your Honor, the articles, and we did submit the references to the State Department reports and the warnings that the State Department had given to U.S. citizens about traveling to Mexico.
I mean, the odd thing is that Mexico has been doing very well economically recently. So even though it has a lot of crime, it has not actually descended into an anarchic state in which everybody there is endangered.
Your Honor, I would say...
Where does your client live here?
He and his brother Gavino, whose case is up before this court next week, own a two-flat on the north side of Chicago.
Where on the north side?
I believe it's like the 4000 block north.
So you ought to compare the crime rate there with the average crime rate in Mexico.
I think what we're talking about is the brutal violence, the kidnapping in Mexico, the beheadings, the torture, and the other things that have been happening there. People held for ransom.
A lot of bad stuff happening in neighborhoods in Chicago.
That's true. I would submit, Your Honor, that it's not like this. This is violence that's very horrific, and things that are happening to innocent victims.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Berg. Ms. Malloy?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Jessica Malloy, and I represent the U.S. Attorney General in this matter. Your Honors, there are three relevant board decisions before the Court today, and in each of these situations, Mr. Cruz Mayaho failed to comply with his procedural requirements for permitting the board to grant his motion, either motion to reconsider or motion to reopen. With the first motion before the court, he failed to file his motion to reopen within 90 days.
Has the board adopted a policy with regard to removal to Mexico in light of the high crime rate there?
Your Honor,
the horrific conditions that Mr. Berg mentioned. I suppose there are different ways of being murdered, and some are more repulsive than others, like the beheadings. We don't care for that.
Your Honor, the board and this court has consistently held that civil strife, generalized violence, is not a basis upon which an individual can establish prima facie eligibility for asylum or for withholding of removal. And so in this case, the board would consistently hold that and did in denying the August 4th, 2011 motion to reopen that he could not establish prima facie eligibility for asylum and withholding of removal.
Is that about him, his connections in Mexico, that makes him particularly vulnerable?
No, Your Honor. First, the reason being is that he failed to comply with his statutory and regulatory obligations with submitting an affidavit in support of his claim that he is prima facie eligible for relief and protection, and that was the first basis for the board's denial of that motion to reopen.
But, you know, the board was being almost ridiculously picky about that. It's like it had one box of all this information in the other Mexican cases about all of the violence in Mexico, and then it had Mr. Cruz Mayaho's box, and it was pretending that it, you know, could see only Mr. Cruz Mayaho's box. One of the points of having an expert administrative agency is that they do, in fact, obtain expertise about these areas. So when Mr. Cruz Mayaho comes up and says, you know, conditions are intolerably violent, you know, there are portions of Mexico that are in a virtual state of war with the drug lords and so on. For the United States to just kind of shrug its shoulders and say, well, we don't know anything about that in this case because we only know about in this other case where we've given relief, is almost silly. I mean,
There's a couple responses I have to that issue, one being that the board in Salgado-Sagado was presented with a timely motion to reopen that was a joint motion to reopen with DHS.
But in other words, but the information, you know, timeliness, I think, if you want to argue that, I totally understand that you don't want this rolling, you know, file a petition for reconsideration and now another 90 days and now another 90 days and now another 90. That's a perfectly sound argument. We didn't know there was a problem in Mexico. Strikes me as a very weak point for the board to make.
I think the board was arguing that there are statutory and regulatory obligations that he failed to comply with, because they did go on to analyze the facts of this record.
Does the board ever conduct studies of any sort? So, for example, it might be interesting to find out what the current situation of people who've been deported to Mexico in the last 10 years, of whom there must have been a lot, right? Have a lot of them been killed in Mexico or what? Or do they adjust? Or do we know anything about that? Does anyone study that? Or you just have newspaper articles about how terrible Mexico is?
I'm not aware of any studies that were initiated from the board.
Studies, commission studies, Or it just, I was picking up on Judge Wood's point about an expert administrative agency, which is a joke, obviously. But they never try to inform themselves, right, in a systematic way about a particular country, right?
There have not been studies by the board on this particular country, no. And the statute and the regulations do not require that the board go outside of the record in which it's presented in order to make these findings. But in this case,
of course,
the board...
the State Department has studied Mexico.
Yes, Your
Honor. And its reports can only be described as grim. And the board does read the State Department's reports. Now, I realize the board never does any follow-up when it decides to have somebody removed to find out if they survived the removal for longer than a year, which is a little troubling since you would think that would help them understand how to evaluate claims. But if they don't have the budget, I guess they don't have the budget. But I do think that, again, you could be arguing that Mr. Cruz-Mayaho didn't show why he belonged in any particular group, particularly vulnerable, or you could be saying that we don't know, we don't even know if Mexico has any problems. And it's the second one that I think you can, the board seems to be saying that, and it just doesn't seem to be worthy of much credit.
I believe the board begins its analysis by reviewing the statute and the regulations and saying that this is a requirement. It's different from an asylum proceedings before an immigration judge, which is based on testimony, evidence provided to the immigration judge. This is a motion to reopen that's completely based on paper submissions. So this evidence, it's necessary that this evidence is submitted in support. And this court has found that absence of an affidavit alone is normally sufficient to sustain an argument that the motion was denied not because of an abuse of discretion. But in this case, the board didn't stop there. The board started with the statutory and regulatory analysis and then said, in any event, Mr. Cruz-Mayaho failed to establish prima facie eligibility because of the fact that his argument that he did present in his asylum claim is based on a generalized fear of violence in Mexico. And as this court has held in Escobar versus Holder and Ahmed versus Gonzalez and Salimi versus Ashcroft, this generalized fear of violence is not sufficient to establish that he would indeed suffer persecution in Mexico upon his return.
So I have just a technical question. We have three petitions for review before us. And I'm interested in the government's position as to which ones you think need to be dismissed for lack of jurisdiction and which ones you think simply represent no abuse of discretion.
Well, Your Honor, the first petition for review is reviewing the February 26, 2010 denial.
That's 1634?
Yes, Your Honor. And that decision was the motion to reconsider the motion to reopen denial. And as this court previously pointed out, that Sarmiento versus Holder is dispositive of this case, of that issue. And to the extent the underlying decision was a decision on the merits of his cancellation of removal claim, the court lacks jurisdiction over subsequent motions to reconsider that decision under Martinez-Maldonado. However, he did, under 1252A2D, raise a legal question by presenting to this court whether or not that was timely. It's just subsequently been disposed of by Sarmiento versus Holder. So that would not be a dismissal, Your Honor.
So the bottom line... The bottom line is that, are we still in 1634?
In 1634 alone, there was a properly raised question of law, which would require that this court dispose of the petition.
Okay, so there's a merits ruling
required
for that.
Regarding, and the remainder of the claims there, the court would lack jurisdiction to consider that he raised in that petition for review. Regarding the August 4th, 2011 review petition, that was the review petition on the second untimely motion to reopen and reconsider, that time seeking to apply for relief and protection. That decision the court would need to dispose of, not from a dismissal, would have to be a merits decision because the issue is whether or not the board abused its discretion in determining that there was no changed country conditions and no prima facie eligibility for that relief and protection. And then finally, the October 27, 2011 decision is where the board issued both a motion to reconsider denial and a motion to reopen denial. In those two decisions as well, the board would need to dispose of the decision on the merits because the issue is, one, whether or not the motion to reconsider of the motion to reopen denial was an abuse of discretion, which would be the same analysis we just went through. And the motion to reopen wouldn't be an abuse of discretion.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Your Honors.
Mr. Berg, your time expired. We'll give you another minute. One.
Thank you, Your Honors, very much. In a brief rebuttal to what counsel raised about Salgado, the Salgado decision was the granting of a motion to reconsider after a motion to reopen sua sponte was denied. It was not a joint motion. After repeatedly denying other motions, the board finally did grant, and it was based on evidence that I had submitted. I was his attorney, Reina's attorney, as to the violence in Mexico. Your Honor, also we raised in our motion the change in policy on prosecutorial discretion. I'd like to advise the court that we are continuing to try to obtain prosecutorial discretion from ICE. We believe it's a very compelling case for it, and we will advise the court immediately if we are successful. We thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Malloy. Next case for argument.